Yeah, it's time to parlay, time to win a little money. Deegan and Juice with Kylan and Stucky. I know you got a chalk, but it's time for the teaser. This is how we do it when it's football season. Ayy, Kylan and Stucky, yeah. Ayy, Kylan and Stucky, woo.
What's up, Degenerate Nation? Welcome to Degen and Juice, episode 37. I'm Stucky, and with me, as always, is Colin Wilson on this very boring day in sports betting world. We had some news come out with the legalization, or I should say the state's decision. And joining us is David Payne Purdom, who, by the way, you have in a different life, David. You would be a great tout. You have a great tout's name.
And then you'd see my ticks, and then that would end my business pretty quick.
That hasn't stopped some touts, though. But Purdom Sports works. You could use pain in a lot of different ways. But I'm sure most of you know David from ESPN, one of the best, if not the best, in my opinion, gambling reporters out there. And, you know, we're going to get into some of the details as to what this decision means overall to some of the leagues, and then, you know, for daily bettors, what does it mean? What's it going to change? Do you want to just, you know, the first question I have for you, David, do you want to just give a quick 30-second summary for what happened and what it means, and then give your perspective or some of the things that you're hearing from each of the major leagues, because I know that you're close with them.
So the Supreme Court today struck down the federal ban on state-sponsored sports betting. It's the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act. It's been in place since 1992. It lasted 26 years. New Jersey had sued in a case that went off and on for 6 years against the sports leagues. Today, the Supreme Court ruled that it was unconstitutional, and basically that opened up a pathway for states to legalize sports betting. Some of the leagues are supportive of this. The NBA, Major League Baseball, they want some of the stipulations put in place, but overall they're supporting legalization. The NFL came out with its strongest statement so far in a long time about the issue. It says it's going to Congress, and they're going to see if they can get Congress to put them a federal framework together. And things go really smoothly in Congress, as we all know, so that shouldn't make any problem. But so that's kind of where we're at right now. The NCAA is still, you know, completely opposed to this. However, some of their institutions, including West Virginia and Marshall, have been engaged in some of the conversations in West Virginia, the state there, and they are looking to be compensated for any costs they believe will be coming, compliance costs that will be coming from legalization of sports betting. So all the sports leagues are starting to kind of, I guess, be resigned that this is going to happen. What's the best way to position ourselves?
Well, first off, I was going to say, first off, happy legalization day to all of us that have been doing this for so long. But, David, the AP released a map, and I'm trying to look at this from like a regular better standpoint that doesn't live in Vegas or doesn't live maybe where it's, you know, legalized like in the UK. But the AP released a map, and it had New Jersey, Mississippi, West Virginia, Indiana. And I think everybody's initial first question is, which state's going to be first to market, and what is that process? Am I going to go to the dog track? Am I going to go to the horse track? Is it going to be a casino? Who's in the lead, like, that's going to be first to market to offer a line?
No, New Jersey is going to be first, no doubt. Monmouth Park, the horse track there, says it can be up and running here within a couple weeks. That may be pushing the envelope a little much, but I do believe New Jersey will be the fastest to get something up. Probably start at the horse tracks and maybe eventually get up to Atlantic City by football season. Mississippi released a statement today that says they'll be up and running in about 45 days. That's over there in the Gulf Coast. If you guys have ever been down there, Gulf Shores and Biloxi area, it's kind of a cool little area with a bunch of riverboat casinos and some land-based ones as well.
Oh, and don't forget,
be quickly as well.
Don't forget Tunica, my friend. Tunica is a monster gambling. Yeah, so
there you go. So they'll be already up there. I think West Virginia, we mentioned them, will be pretty quick to act. Pennsylvania has a law in place, but I think they got a ways to go before they can quite get that figured out. I would suspect Delaware will be pretty quick. You know, they have a NFL lottery only. I think they will build off that and start taking legal sports bets pretty soon as well. You might also see someone like a Rhode Island kind of sneak in there. And I'm not counting out New York yet. They have some legislation introduced. They're going to run into a end of the legislative session here at the end of June, but I'm not going to count them out for getting something done, too, because I do believe this will kind of push the envelope and get people moving quickly.
Yeah, one of the things that you mentioned is, you know, the leagues trying to put a framework out there. So if the leagues say they want to cut, and I've also read that some of the taxes on the gross bets, I don't know if this is accurate or not, but could be 30%. And I know that when Vegas first started, before they offered a legal bet, that the taxes were 10%. And what they did to get around that is they would write like little letters on a ticket, like an R for a $50 ticket, mm-hmm. but the R would signify that it was 10 times more than that. So it was all under the table and you can avoid some of those taxes that work for everyone involved before the taxes were cut to 2%, which is where I think they are today. But if you're talking about 30% taxes and then there's cuts for the leagues, I mean, in order to just make a little profit, the standard VIG is going to be minus 140, mm-hmm. minus 150. That's essentially, I mean, who's going to do that? Do you have any insight there?
So Pennsylvania is the one that proposed a 36% tax, and that's on the win, which is, you know, people hear these big numbers, $150 billion bet annually in the U.S., and they think that's how much the sports books make. But, you know, we lose a lot of bets, so they only end up holding about 5% of that. So a 36% tax on a 5% hold is going to be pretty tough. Now, if you bring the sports leagues in and they want either 1% or 0.25% off every wager, not winners or losers. Every $100 bet you bet on the NBA wants the sportsbook to give them a dollar, whether you win or lose. So that's no good as well. And when you're taking that 1%, it equals about 20% of their hold if you do the math with 5% of the hold and 1% of 5% is 20%. So they've got some room here and some work to do to kind of figure all this out. The states have been very adamantly kind of stiff-arming, adamantly opposed. Like, no, we're not giving you anything here, sports leagues. You rich sports leagues come in here think you're going to take our money. That's not going to happen. But politics play out, and like I said, these leagues are going to go to Congress, and they may have a little more success, a little more clout in Washington, D.C., to get some sort of cut. And, you know, maybe a partnership where the sports leagues aren't always fighting against the market, maybe that can be beneficial. But we just got to figure out what can the leagues bring to the table and how much is that worth? And I'm not sure we figured that out yet.
So let me ask, is this, I mean, it sounds like it could, I mean, this is great. I'm glad it's going to be legalized and it's going to be offered by the states. But, you know, Stuck is right. If it's minus 130, minus 140, I can go and shop elsewhere offshore. I can still shop in Vegas to get what I want. I mean, this is like going to a blackjack table. And of course, I own a residence in Oklahoma. So I pay a dollar ante just to play a hand of blackjack. And then if I hit, you know, a blackjack, it's 6-5. So it sounds like that kind of model where you have no chance of actually winning whatsoever. I think one of my questions, and I've asked this to you on Twitter before, which is, Native American casinos make up such a huge part of the landscape when it comes to betting in the Midwest. There's in the Seattle region, in the Arizona territories. Are they going to have different rules from what's legislated in each state? Are they like a separate entity?
Yeah, they have the different compacts, and certain compacts have certain stipulations. It would be impossible to break each one down as we go, but tribal gaming is going to have a voice in this. And some of those compacts say that you can't tax us on this kind of gaming win. And some of them say that you can't introduce another form of gambling. Connecticut went about as far as, you know, precluding sports betting from the definition of gambling, very similar to what happened with daily fantasy sports a few years ago, just to get around the whole tribal compact. So the tribes are going to have something to say definitely in this. You know, there's still a lot of little things to work out like this. So, you know, while some of these states have been quick to move and they will be quick, other states are going to have a harder time in trying to figure that out. And by the time they figure it out, then maybe the NFL gets their way in D.C. and we have to regroup again.
Yeah, and what I think it comes down to, there's also, you forget about other states where this isn't even on the radar for them. I mean, this, if you live in New York or Pennsylvania, and you mentioned Delaware. I've been to Delaware Park before where they have those parlay lotteries. But if you're in Utah, I mean, this doesn't mean anything to you. So it's really state-specific, which is what the law is. But one of the things that some of our listeners will be really interested in is the offshore markets. A lot of people have offshore accounts, and if the juice is high, you know, if there are these taxes and cuts for the leagues, and you know, or even if it's just 10 cents or 15 cents, whatever it is, one of the things I, you know, would imagine that these offshores would use as, you know, a competitive lever is their reduced juice. You know, they could say we have 2-3 cent lines. When I talked with you earlier in the day, you brought up liquidity issues, though, with people trying to get stuff down because there's going to be less of a handle offshore. Do you want to just speak to what you're hearing or how you think this will impact the offshore books and markets and some of that shadiness that goes on?
Yeah, there's pros and cons for that. The advantages that the unregulated market, the offshore market, has is they're not going to have to deal with the regulatory costs. They're not going to have to deal with greedy states putting on too big of taxes. So they are going to be able to offer better odds. Now, you know, you guys and myself that pay attention to this or in gamble, you know, regularly, we'll notice that. But will the new guy that's down the street and just wants to put $20 on the Falcons or whoever, is he going to notice it? I'm not so sure. I think people were going to want to bet legally if they can. In fact, I did a Twitter poll a while ago asking if what would you do, stay with your offshore book betting minus 110 or bet in the legal market if you had to lay minus 115? And it was almost 50-50, which was really shocking to me. I was like, are you kidding me? Why? I can't believe this many people. And you figure my Twitter following is, you know, more experienced gamblers. So I thought that was pretty weird. So I think that we live inside, operate inside kind of a gambling savvy, sports betting savvy bubble. On the outside of it, I think people maybe aren't going to be as price sensitive. Now, a lot of people disagree and say ultimately everybody's going to gravitate to the cheaper prices, and that's where offshore has an advantage. And, you know, Stucky, you and I talked about this earlier today, is credit. If you're not playing offshore, you're playing with the local guy down at the country club or at the bar or whatever. And maybe he extends you credit where you only have to pay if you're up or down $1,000. So, boy, credit is a big advantage if you're not having to put out your cash. And if you want to bet a futures bet on the Cavs and you don't have to wait all season to not get your money back. So there are some advantages. Now, the pros of the regulated market, if you have an offshore book that says, you know what, I'm not paying you, that's it, you're done or whatever, you have no recourse with them. They're just going to give you the finger and say, tough break. You go to the regulated market now, and something happens that you don't like, you will have some sort of recourse. You'll be able to go to the gaming association or the gaming regulators, gaming control, and say, look, this is what happened. Do I have a case? Sometimes you don't get the money back. Sometimes you do. But at least you have some kind of a course of action.
For some of those books that like to shut down for a week and won't get you a payout to your Bitcoin account, huh?
There you go.
So I have a kind of an interesting – I was thinking about this earlier today – there are a number of sports in a number of other countries like the UK and Australia, like cricket, for instance, where you can they have a betting window like actually at the event. Who do you think, and it could be 2 years down the line, it could be 3 years down the line, what league would be most accepting of having a betting window in their venues of where the sporting event is?
Well, the NBA is the most progressive on this, so I would say them, but I would say it's not going to be a betting window. It's going to be an app that you can access inside the stadium. You know, it's going to be some sort of mobile app, some online version of it. I've been saying this on the radio all day. I think one of the leagues that maybe people are sleeping on a little bit that will benefit from this is MLS. Because the promotion that everybody keeps pointing to is in-game wagering. Look what has happened in the UK. Right now, more money is bet after a game starts than before a game starts. People are continuing to point to that. That's what's going to happen in the U.S. Everybody's going to be betting in-game. And I think soccer plays better in-game wagering than some of, like, you know, basketball, something that moves real quick, even football. So I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see a spike in interest in MLS.
That's interesting you mentioned the apps, because the Vegas apps that are out there right now, like Cantor, the Stations, the Will Hill app, I can't necessarily check their lines when I'm outside of state borders. So I'm wondering with this ruling, if I'm in a state that is legalized and does offer it, I wonder if Vegas will have the ability to allow me to bet with Cantor or Stations or Will Hill if I'm in a legalized state. I'm not sure if that technology will ever get around.
you're going to run into some Wire Act issues. We're going to have to reconcile that as well. So we still got some laws. The Wire Act basically prohibits betting information to be transmitted across state lines. So if you were in Nevada and you saw a better line in Pennsylvania, it would be difficult for you to probably access that sports book for now. Eventually, you know, let's be honest here, this is probably going to become some sort of open national market, and that's the way it should be, and that'll be the most liquidity, and that'll be the way that most people make, the states included, to make the most money possible. But in the beginning, it's going to be difficult, and I think it's going to be difficult for the operators, too. They're going to be able to see, gosh, we're lopsided on the Eagles in Pennsylvania, but here in Vegas, we're even. Are we going to move the line in Pennsylvania and have Eagles minus 9 in Pennsylvania and Eagles minus 6.5 in Vegas? That just seems kind of weird to me. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, that's an interesting point that of what Vegas' response is. So I know you're close. I think you retweeted a statement from the CEO of Caesars, and I've heard this two different ways, right? So sports betting is not the biggest revenue source in Vegas, as we all know. But do they lose some revenue because you can bet in other sports, or this is the person that I think you were alluding to before, the armchair casual sports fan who didn't bet before, who might now bet because it's legal and he won't care about price, but now is there a bigger sports betting population or market that it actually will increase the amount of bets when people go to Vegas? So do you have any thoughts there of what you're hearing from Vegas? Do they care? Does this matter to them?
Yeah, you know, at the beginning of this, when this started, and this case started, you know, almost 12 years ago, it has roots back to 12 years at least, Vegas was, you know, dismissive and, you know, okay, yeah, let's legalize it. They had been, you know, crapped on by the league commissioners for so long, you know, talked down about how disparaging this sports betting was for their product and this and this and this. And I think they had a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, kind of, you know, stick it to the league, legalize this everywhere. But they also thought at the time that, you know, these states are going to come to us and they're going to say, hey, consult with us, help us set this up. Maybe Nevada can even be the hub of sports betting. Everything flows through Nevada. It hasn't played out like that. And the last year, these sports books in Nevada, especially guys that don't have properties in other states, talking like South Point and Station Casinos, they've become a little more concerned. Like, gosh, are people still going to come out here? Now, mm-hmm. I think Vegas is a destination place, regardless of sports betting, and I think they have a huge head start on everybody else. You're not going to be able to recreate that environment that we all love at March Madness or during the Super Bowl or just on a random college football weekend as quickly as you will. You know, it's already set up in Las Vegas, so it's going to take a little bit to kind of build that out in these other places. So eventually, man, it's going to impact Las Vegas, in my opinion. Right off the top, I don't think it's going to be that quick.
And they're already competing with each other. I mean, Stucky and I were out there for bowl season, and I convinced him to go to the Wynn, which was an old-school, dark, kind of a, you know, horses kind of place where people would hang out. And now it's lit up like a Christmas tree. It's so bright in there. I wonder if the sports books out in Vegas will, you know, they're competing with each other, if the upgrades at the sports books or, you know, they're going to do whatever they can to get turnout. I actually, in my opinion, the biggest winner of today was the penny slots. Because what you've done is in the States is you've got people to walk in the casino, and that's the biggest driver of all, you know, revenue inside the casinos anyways.
Sure. That's what sports betting does. It attracts people, gets people there. You know, I had a great quote from Richie Bacciolari. He was a longtime sportsbook director at Caesars back in the 90s. And he said, yeah, you know, I may go down to a sports book and I may have a beer and maybe you only make, you know, 10, 20 bucks off me while I watch a game. But the meantime, my wife's out there playing slots for all that time, and you're into her for a few hundred dollars. So that's exactly, you know, the way I kind of look at it. This is people say that sportsbook is an amenity to Las Vegas. It's just something for their guests. And I agree with that. You know, you go there, you want to bet on sports, you want to watch a game, but then you also go eat dinner there, and you also buy a drink, and you also play video poker or slots in these games that have a lot higher hold percentage. So these other states will probably see that as well. This is how we can attract people to our property.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And David, before we let you go, I just wanted to kind of ask you two final questions. One, we mentioned, well, Colin and I work for Action Network, as everyone knows and as you know, mm-hmm. and you work for ESPN. So the first question I wanted to ask is, do you think that this is now going to open up the mainstream coverage of betting? Have you started to hear that, or do you think that it's, hey, now it's going to be embraced, or is that going to take, you know, a little bit of time? And then the second part is, what is the doomsday scenario for all of this? Like, what derails it? What happens where, because everyone's like, hey, it's going to be legal, and but you don't really hear people saying, okay, what if this happens? What could go wrong? You know, maybe one or two things that could really derail this for, you know, maybe not every state, but for a lot of states, or something that you're just seeing or you think could be a potential red flag.
Sure. We'll start with the first one first. Two good questions. I think mainstream media has already embraced sports betting. I don't think I would have a job if I didn't. I don't know if you guys would have, there would be an action network if sports betting hasn't been already embraced. And I think we saw that change starting about 5-6 years ago. I started seeing, you know, headlines on ESPN.com about sports betting. And, you know, 10 years ago, I would have been like, wow, what in the world? It must be point shaving or something like this. But now, I mean, the betting angles of the Floyd Mayweather-Conor McGregor fight, they did way more traffic than any of the other regular fight recaps. Same thing with Super Bowl point spread. The Super Bowl point spread moves, and when you have a story on that, that generates a ton of traffic. So the interest is there, and I think the mainstream media is finally – embraced it. And I think that started about 5 years ago with your guys' boss, with Mr. Millman, pushing it to the envelope a little bit. So the doomsday scenario, the one that the sports books are scared about, is the NCAA figuring a way to get a carve out. And we somehow get a law that says you cannot bet on college sports in the U.S. And that would just crush the sports books from March Madness to college football. That would be a huge, huge loss. And Emmert has floated some sort of carve-out for NCAA. Athletics couldn't bet on it. Wouldn't surprise me if some of this federal legislation, if that's not at least floated in there. It will be opposed greatly by the gaming industry. So I think some politics are going to come into play here. That is a doomsday. I guess the other doomsday, as you guys have mentioned, is if these states are just too greedy and they don't realize the profitability of these books, and they try to overtax it, and then we end up with just basically books saying, well, I can't take straight bets anymore. I can only do parlays because the tax is too great. And I don't think any of us want that, and all that would do is keep us in the unregulated market.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Like, likelihood of the NCAA, where would you put that at? Of the NCAA
before you answer this, David, you did great. Like, over the past year and a half, you've released your own odds. And I believe for it to be passed, you were -110 for a while. Then you were -140 for a while. So you were reading the market extremely well. So I'm interested to hear what your number is on the NCAA putting out something like this.
I think they're heavy underdogs. I would say probably 3-1 underdogs to get some sort of national carve out. For collegiate athletics. You know, now New Jersey's current legislation, the one that's they're going to have to tweak and push back through to get this going here, you're not allowed to bet on Rutgers or Seton Hall or any of their games, even if it's outside of New Jersey. So there are still that kind of stigma about this, that for some reason they think because the betting takes place near a school, that's going to make it be more likely to be compromised. Where, you know, in my opinion, it's, if I'm going to fix a game, I'm going to my local guy where I don't need to barely know my name. You know, that's where I'm going to try to place my bets on a fixed outcome. I'm not going to the regulated sports book that's next to the stadium where I got to give them my driver's license, my social security number. It's befuddling to me how they haven't figured that out yet.
Obviously, none of these people have watched Hawaii football at 2:00 in the morning.
Boy, Hawaii back in the day, it was about, like, I would say that's probably 2009, 2010. There were some lot of rumors about that, weren't there?
The Booster Club, yes. I've looked at them myself.
the shadiest games that college basketball is even worse. But and back to your ESPN point, I still remember when I was shocked when I started to see like lines on the bottom line. Now it's so commonplace, mm-hmm. but you know, before there, you would never see a line on a football game. But yeah, I've talked to a couple to circle back on the bookies. There's always going to be locals, and you know, you and mm-hmm. I, as you talked about, you mentioned it. People, there's the worst gamblers. I talked to a couple locals today. The worst gamblers are their most profitable clients. These are the people that aren't liquid, that are chasing degenerate gamblers that need to bet on credit. Some people that need to hide that they bet from their wives or you know, to tax authorities. There's always going to be that market that exists. And one book brought up a semi-interesting point that he's worried about that, you know, once it does become legal, that the authorities are going to have more of an incentive to shut down these locals because it's, you know, they have more of an incentive now to go after their revenue. So there's a lot of, there's a lot here. There's many different layers, and we'll have it covered. David will have it covered as always. I'm sure you're doing so many interviews today and this week. So we really do appreciate your time, and hopefully we can catch back up with you on another episode. But thanks for joining us, Dave.
Thanks, David.
Thank you guys for having me.
All right. Cheers. All right. Thanks, Dave. I appreciate your time, man. I know you're swamped.
Cool, guys. I've got to file my third story here, and then I got two more podcasts to do tonight. So hey, long night for DP, but I appreciate it.
Yeah. All right, Pertum.
Good one, brother.
See ya.
Thanks again to Mr. David Pertum for joining us. Very exciting day. I hope that was informative. You know, no one better to go to for that kind of information. Outstanding reporter. But before we signed off here on this episode, we do want to touch on a few other sports things. So we have the NHL playoffs going on. I know that I have a future on the Jets, which looks pretty good. I think that they're going to get to the Stanley Cup final. And the Lightning, who look dead in the water. I mean, Vasilevsky, yeah. I mean, what time is it? It's 6 past Vasilevsky, that old joke. I mean, he looks awful. The Caps have always pretty much owned him. And Holtby, who has the second highest, I believe he has the second highest save percentage in NHL history among playoff goalies with at least 20 postseason games. He's been amazing in the postseason. It's amazing that he didn't start with the Caps, but as of right now, things can change in the NHL series, but it looks like we're on a collision course of Washington, Winnipeg, and I was petrified of this Washington team once I got over that hump.
Yeah, you don't know if there's going to be like a hangover effect, you know, like when Ovi finally gets over the big, you know, Pens series, is he going to have a hangover? And obviously, 2-0 going home is a pretty good place for them to be, and that'll be, you know, tomorrow when everybody listens, that'll be the game tomorrow night. I'm really interested in tonight, which, you know, will be long gone, which is, you know, can Vegas get a game? Because Winnipeg's just so big. And I read this stat, and it may apply tonight, because it really curbed my live betting in this game. I took a stance on Winnipeg for game one, and I'm doing it again tonight. But once I read one of our stats that came out of the Action Network, that the team that scores first ends up winning 83% of the time in all Vegas and Winnipeg games. So the live betting in this series, like, I'm not trying to take the other side.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, yeah, both of these home crowds are they're going to be crazy. And if you can steal one on the road, it's huge. I mean, Winnipeg was the best home team during the regular season. And if they just win out at home the rest of the way, you know, they'll win a Stanley Cup. And, yeah, so tonight will be a big game. And then, yeah, as you mentioned, game three, if Tampa can just – if Vasilevsky can somehow turn it around and then they get game three – you know, all of a sudden that pressure starts to shift back to Washington. And that's in, you know, a series can turn quick. And, you know, instead of going down 3-0, and even in 3-0, we've seen 3-0 comebacks in the NHL. But I think the Bolts will be dead if they go down 3-0. But, yeah, they can turn this all around peg at game three. So, should be interesting. I mean, I doubt that the NHL is thrilled with a potential Winnipeg-Vegas final. I mean, they're not the biggest markets in the world. I think two cities with close to about 700,000 people in each. But, I mean, the Vegas thing is an interesting story. U.S., Canada, you'll have a Canadian team in there. So we'll see. Go Jets. As of now, I'm giving up on my Lightning future, but I could be pulled back in. So we'll see. It's been a good NHL playoff so far, and hopefully it continues to get better. And then on the NBA side, we just came off a very disappointing NBA round, what, 4-5-game series. And, I mean, I'm hoping that Houston-Golden State is going to be as epic as it could potentially be. And I'm thinking about betting Houston tonight. I keep going back and forth. But if they're going to win, they need to – I mean, this is the game that they, you know, have to win, right?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this with Matt Moore, that I said, listen, at some point, if Rockets get game one, you're going to be able to get the Warriors at plus money for the championship, because I think they're minus 140 going in tonight. I think the Rockets know that this is a make or break tonight. So I think this is the best time to play is the Rockets tonight. And then, and if that happens, I'm coming right back to hit the Warriors for the title. I think what's interesting is going on over in the Eastern Conference, because friend of the podcast who knows way more about the NBA than me, Matt Moore, has been calling for this Cavs team is terrible. They're absolutely just defying all logic and winning any games because it's just LeBron just doing unbelievable things and the rest of the roster is trash. And I think, you know, is Boston just going to expose them and be able to close up the series? I think it's really interesting to watch.
Yeah, it's their team defense, Boston's, is amazing. And the Brad Stevens is, I mean, obviously a wizard for what he's doing and what he did at Butler. And he's just a phenomenal coach. But they just bodied up Cleveland 1-5 and just defended them. I mean, the interesting thing, though, is that with the NBA, Boston's a big market, but I don't think that they want I don't think that they want a Boston-Golden State final. And what, I mean, game one in Golden State, what would that line be, 11, 12? I mean, you're talking about double-digit lines in the NBA finals. And the Celtics don't have their two stars, their two best players. I know Jason Tatum is an up-and-coming star, but you know, everyone wants to see LeBron go against Golden State, even if the Cavs aren't a better team, which it doesn't look like they are, even with the Celtics, you know, missing, you know, Hayward and Irving. But yeah, I didn't see what Cleveland can actually do to turn around that series. It's pretty amazing what Boston's doing. But on the Western Conference side, yeah, I think that the other thing is, I think I want to look at Houston in the home games in the first half. Because if there's one criticism of this Golden State team, sometimes they just come out slow. And, you know, Houston can feed off the crowd, and they'll come out maybe, you know, get hot from three. And then, you know, Golden State's you always have that potential where they go on that enormous run. So I might either split my bet first half in game or just look for first halves on Houston this series. Because, you know, Golden State has, you know, come out slow in certain cases this postseason. But which finals are you rooting for? What matchup?
You know, it's a star-driven league. So really, I mean, I don't think anybody could beat the Warriors in the final. I don't think Boston could, and I don't think LeBron could. But I have to think that Vegas overall would be rooting for a Warriors loss to the Celtics. I think that would be probably best-case scenario. So I guess that's what I'm looking for. Because let's just get this LeBron is leaving Cleveland. Let's just get it on the road. I'm ready for all the crazy news. I'm ready for the billboards. I'm ready for all that.
Fair enough. Okay. So we'll keep our eye out on the NBA too. And then before we sign off, you just had a piece come out today on, I know it's Low Limits and you can't really find all the lines everywhere yet, but we're getting close to widespread college football futures and win totals being out there. ACC totals came out and win totals, and your piece, you basically like Clemson a lot given their schedule. And you're low on Florida State and you're high on Syracuse. Syracuse being high on Syracuse football is not an easy thing to root for. But yeah, I mean, you make a good case with their non-conference schedule. But do you want to speak to Clemson and then either one of or both of those win totals?
Yeah, definitely. So the two win totals are low totals, and it's only being offered at a book that I don't really recommend. But the Clemson prop to make the playoff, that's offered at Five Dimes, Bet Online, and I'm not sure if it's being offered out in Vegas, but I could fire on those at $250 limits until I move the line. So it's being offered at Five Dimes at +105, and that is Clemson to make the playoff. I urge everybody to check out the piece, read what I say about the schedule, about the familiarity of who Clemson's going up against. It's not, I mean, their trap games are really not trap games. They really know their opponents well this year. I think the one thing that's not mentioned in the piece is that whatever Tua is to Alabama, he's that explosiveness that Jalen Hurts can't provide. Well, Clemson has that solved now. They've got that taken care of with this new quarterback coming in, Trevor Lawrence. So it's a good piece. I would get some Clemson money down in some sort of fashion. Shop wisely because it's down as low as 450 at some books. I was able to grab +750 on the national title. The Vegas is going to release Clemson's win total at 10.5. And if you're going to take an over on that, why not just take a prop on the playoff that pays plus money? It's just a much more sound financial plan. As far as the Syracuse one goes, you know, I mean, you put at the very we put at the very end of the article, hold your nose and take it because it's rough to bat. I mean, Dino is in a make or break year here. you know, this, you could potentially see a new coaching change if he just doesn't get it done with the style that they play. And a lot of that rides on Eric Dungy.
Dungy stay healthy.
Yeah, Dungy can't stay healthy, but then again, Dungy can't stay in the pocket. Like, at any time he thinks he feels pressure, the guy's going to take off. So,
well, and he loves contact. What was he, like, jump-kicking guys last year in games? And
he saw Lamar Jackson 2 years ago run at light speed, and I thought, for some reason, yeah, now he's doing he's got a Seth Rollins curb stomp in his arsenal. So, no, it's a make-or-break year for Syracuse.
Yeah, I mean, the case basically that you make, which I liked, is that they have three pretty easy non-conference games, which they should be wins. And then they have four or five other potential ACC games where they could get a win. And, you know, Syracuse last year, they came close to pulling some upsets and actually did pull a huge upset. So, and that even when you remove the possibility of a huge upset on a weird, they have a weird Friday night home game against someone, I don't know. But, yeah, I think that the case is there and, you know, could come down to, which I think you mentioned in the article, a November game against Louisville. And
right.
They haven't won a November. Syracuse has won a November in how long?
2015. Yeah, they're a true enigma.
Yeah,
don't know what's going to show up.
But yeah, you make a good case, and with Florida State, I think that's too high as well, given their schedule, their coaching changes, some of the turnover there. So yeah, if you haven't checked out that piece, do so. We'll also have just so much more college football content coming, especially as the lines start to roll out to more books with higher limits. So keep your eye out. You're going to have all the college football coverage that you could want. So, Colin, thanks for joining me as always. And thanks again to David Purdom. And we'll catch you all next time. Cheers.
Peace out. Some sequins jeans. Everybody got their cups, but they ain't chipped in. Now this time.